Welcome, everyone,
to the post-Christmas completely unnecessary podcast. Wednesday? Why would you listen to Wednesday, December 29th, 2021? That's Musin Next, Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we will be discussing what we got for Christmas. Will be one of the things we discuss. It's a festive CU podcast. Maybe we'll do a year-end thing real quick. We'll also be talking about Sonic scented candles. We'll be discussing good old games being in trouble. The Intellivision Amico. Pat played an Intellivision Amico game. Clickbait. Hold on for that news and a Patreon poll topic and other stuff. So Ian, what did you get for Christmas, buddy?
Sick. That's what I got for Christmas. Yes, so
you got viruses.
In addition to that, I got a knife sharpener, which I've been needing and wanting for quite some time. And Vani also got me a full set of the Pac-Man brunch figurines.
Ones we spoke on the podcast a couple months ago.
Yeah, we talked about them on the podcast.
They look nice.
Yep. And my brother got me a set of Huey, Dewey, Louie, and Scrooge Legos that I still need to put together.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
And what viruses did Santa bring you this year?
I had COVID-19 for sure at one point. The way the timeline looks now is that I got it probably while flying. I have a bad back. I talk about that on the podcast. Flying is not good for my back, and my back has been really aggravated for the past like month and a half. I threw it out end of October, and it hasn't fully healed yet. So 7 hours of flying combined with maybe 2 hours of sleep the night before and a lot of work leading up to leaving, I thought maybe I was just exhausted from travel. You know, I thought maybe that was it. But it was body aches. I was sweating. And I started to feel a little bit better the next day. And by the third day, I was pretty good. I was pretty good. But my brother tested positive for COVID. So we got a bunch of COVID tests, and I was checking my temperature and everything. I had no fever or anything like that. So I'm like, maybe this travel just really beat the shit out of me. But then we all tested. I was positive. Vani was positive. My parents, my brother. And then the next day they tell you to do the second test in the box, you know, within 24 to 36 hours after you do the first test. So I did it and I tested negative. The day I tested positive, I felt fine. The day I tested negative, I felt fine. And then the day after, I started to get like sick again. And I don't know if it's just, I don't think it's COVID, because they say, you know, quarantine for 10 to 12 days from first symptoms. And it's 12 days, I think, if not more, since my first symptoms. So I don't think it's COVID again. I think I caught a cold or the flu on top of it. And it's just been kind of a nightmare. But I sat in a sauna this morning.
Oh, you did the Joe Rogan technique to kill COVID.
Fuck Joe Rogan. But I sat in a sauna this morning, and that loosened me up in the chest, and I'm, you know, starting to get some of the gross shit out of my system. So I should be fine. Unfortunately, I can't test again right now because everyone got Omicron over Christmas. So there's no tests anywhere.
There's just
sold out everywhere.
There's no drive-through site nearby.
They're all like super backed up.
Is it that bad?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like everyone got it from traveling or just being around people. My two cousins got it, and my cousin's husband, you know, a couple other people that seemed like they got it. It's like, yeah, we got sick. I'm like, well, it's going around. It's the super transmissible, hopefully more mild version of COVID. Hopefully.
Well, it certainly seems more mild.
If it's not more mild, we're all fucked, obviously, because like from what I was reading, it spreads like the measles,
right?
And like if you don't know about the measles, the reason why the measles was so deadly was that like literally like someone could walk in a room with it, walk out, you walk in 15 minutes later, you get it,
right?
Like, you don't have to be around the person, like it just lingers. And it sounds like this is closer to something like that. If that's the case, then there's like, you know, thankfully most people are vaccinated at this point. You know, we got to get our boosters in. So like sounds like this might be a rough winter for this.
Yeah.
Might be.
Yeah.
Thankfully, when I read the news about Walter Reed Hospital, it sounds like they've been working on, since the beginning of this, they're working on a vaccine to hit all variants of COVID, not just a specific variant.
Right.
So it has to do with like the spike protein being like a different shape, I believe. I'm not an expert. They came out with that news last week. It was like last week or earlier this week. It was before Christmas by a few days. And it's like, well, that's promising. If they get that to human trials, and hopefully in 2022, we can get that going. But we're going to be dealing with this another year. We're going to go into year three.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's just what's going to happen. So I'm glad you're feeling relatively okay. Glad you got the vaccine. If you hadn't,
oh yeah,
who the hell knows, right?
Right.
Getting the Ian Extreme close-up right now. You're looking up something?
Yeah. Yep.
I'm glad I got my booster a few weeks ago. When I was in Sacramento, I thought about it the whole time. I'm like, I can get something here, even if it's from flying.
Yeah.
And I didn't get anything, knock on wood, that I know of. Or maybe I fought something off, you know, because I got the booster. Like, who knows? That's the thing. That's the world we're living in. So you got knife sharpeners. What did I get? My sister got me spices. My sister got me, there's a spice website that she recommends, that she even says like regular spices are a lot cheaper. And there's like a bunch of fish spices. There was spices you didn't think of, like Ukrainian village spice, and there's a couple other spices in there, and I'm like, all right, I gotta try this on my fish and spice
blends is basically different
blends, different blends you wouldn't try. Spice of life, Ian, that's the expression. Makes your experience totally different. Spice of life.
Yes, variety is the spice of life.
Plain ass chicken. I usually buy my chicken already marinated, so now I'm gonna have to buy just, you know, regular chicken or breasts, and you know, just do it myself. Then that's fine. I'm willing to make the sacrifice.
Yeah, I always buy it plain. It's always more fun to marinate it yourself.
I also got a food hangover with the Feast of the Seven Italian Fishes, which you can hear about on the Patreon exclusive podcast. Patreon.
That's right.
I see you podcast. Boy, it was an experience. So I got that, and then my friend, she got me a present that I didn't ask for. I will say this right now. I have to show it though. It's too funny not to show. And this might get back to the celebrity that's mentioned there. She got me three pairs of boxer briefs, custom ones, with like graphic print on it. And they're actually a good quality. They're stretchy. So I'll say maybe I might have a minor crush on this person, and that's why she got it. But I did not ask for these. I will say that. But she got me boxer briefs of Monica McNutt.
Oh my god,
Monica McNutt is a delightful ESPN and MSG network analyst, and I think she used to play basketball at Georgetown, and she has the best smile, if you can see that.
Oh yeah, no, that's great.
So I love these, but Monica, if this somehow gets to you, Miss McNutt, I did not ask for these. I honestly did not ask for these. So don't be freaked out. But now there's boxer briefs with your face on it 100 times right there. So those are great. Let me put the camera right there. Those are great. So that was a funny present. And then of course my mom got me. My mom always makes me the, you know, she makes me the cookies. Every year. And then I would buy myself Struthfully. Good old Struthfully. So that's what I got. Did anyone get you any scented candles, Ian?
No, but there is a Sonic the Hedgehog scented candle now. That would be great for me. If you ever want to know what candle I would like, get me the Sonic the Hedgehog scented candle.
Smells like hedgehog.
Yeah, it smells like hedgehog. It doesn't say what it's it really smells like. Break the limits, gotta go fast.
Oh.
Sonic the Hedgehog blue candle. It comes with stickers. I kind of want this. Let's see. It doesn't smell like woodland creatures, it says. They're guaranteed to make any grotty game cave smell 1,000 times better. They're still not telling me what this smells like. Oh my god, they made an Amy Rose candle. Geez, Pat, come on now. They made Tails, Sonic, Amy. Is there a Knuckles candle? There's got to be a Knuckles candle.
Oh, Amy's a female hedgehog?
Yes.
Pink one? Okay.
She has
to be pink.
So, The smell is of rose, magnolia, cherry blossom, and sandalwood.
Wait, which one is Sonic?
I'm going to guess he's magnolia, but I don't know for sure.
So these are just candles that, you know what, we're going to get a Sega license and just rebrand these candles and get all the rubes to buy them.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Candles are nice. The aromatherapy is a thing. You want to relax. You want to sit in the bathtub and have a Sonic candle going. I'm not judging you.
You can do this. It's time to fly, says the Tails candle.
Get like 14 Tails candles and you put them around you like in a ritual, a Sonic ritual. You can do that. You can do whatever you want.
More interesting to me in the Sonic the Hedgehog news portion of our intro is the announcement of Sonic Legos. The Sonic the Hedgehog Lego set was one of those sets that was like made by fans, and then they put it up on that website and they vote for it and they turn it into a real Lego set. I actually like the Sonic Lego set. I think it's far more interesting than the Mario Lego set, because you actually recreate a segment of a level. So you recreate like the bridge with the loop and you make the little bad guys, and it looks like a little diorama. Those Mario Legos, like, obviously kids love them, but as an adult, I look at them and I don't get anything out of them. It's more meant to be a toy. It would be far cooler to me if you made like a, you know, a piece of the scenery or the diorama or something, or made a pipe. So I like this. I don't think this is going to be a, I don't think they're going to do a series of them. I think it's okay. Just this one-off set. But it looks really cool, and they come out in January, and I'm not sure on the price. I don't think they announced the price yet, but that's actually a set that I might consider picking up.
So, of course, it's with Green Hill Zone. You get the loop.
You get a loop. You get the little wooden bridge. You get the famous enemies. You get the coins. You get the little. You make the little power-up boxes. So, yeah, I like it. It would actually be a Lego set you could build and put on, like, a shelf, and it would look nice.
And it's Lego Company. This isn't like...
No, it's Lego.
Okay, it's not one of the there's like one or two competitors that are still out there.
It's not Mega Bloks. It's Lego.
Mega Bloks. There's another one. Well, this would help people for next Christmas. A bill has been introduced. Democrats are pushing a bill to outlaw scalper bots.
Woohoo!
This is from PC Mag. House and Senate Democrats reintroduced the Stopping Grinch Bots Act to crack down on scalper-run bots. On Monday, U.S. Rep. Paul Tonko from New York and Senators Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut and Chuck Schumer from New York and Ben Ray Lusion from New Mexico announced a new push for the Stopping Grinch Bots Act. The bicameral bill will crack down on cyber grinches using bot tech to quickly buy up whole inventories of popular toys and resell them to parents at higher prices. They originally introduced the bill in November 2019. I don't know why this wasn't passed immediately. Like, yeah. Who would be against this? I guess you're a Grinch. So let's see if this gets pushed through. I mean, can we get this through? The Federal Trade Commission will be tasked with enforcement if this went through. It'll be FTC. So there you go.
I mean, I'd love to see it. I don't know why this isn't a bipartisan thing. I don't know why everyone's not behind it. That strikes me as kind of odd.
Well, it sounds like, okay, there was a law passed in 2016 that outlawed bots from circumventing control measures to buy up tickets for public events. So this would expand that bill. Just do it for everything then.
Yeah.
The law made it illegal for scalpers to resell the tickets obtained through the bot. Just do it for everything then. Why not? They got no foresight. If you're going to do it for tickets... These are all old curmudgeons in Congress. Come on. You don't know that people are going to... Come on.
Do it for shoes, toys, everything. Video games, graphics cards.
Well, I'm trying to think who can possibly be against this. Who can possibly be against this? Well, people that make money doing this. That's what they be against.
Yes.
I'm sure other people's Christmases.
I'm sure someone in Congress is like, oh, my freedom to be an asshole. I mean...
Yeah, they're not charging enough. That's what... It's like that dumb fucking argument that happened a couple times to people online. It's like, no, that's not what... This isn't capitalism. This is a fucking faked arbitrage system, and you're restricting supply and demand of a product artificially. It's ridiculous.
Yes. So
hopefully it happens. We have to mention the passing of John Madden at 85 happened yesterday on the 28th. Obviously, John Madden. If you're listening to this podcast, you know about the Madden series of games. I go back to, what was the first year?
1988.
That's when we covered in the video game years, when it was on the computer at first. It became the most accurate depiction probably of any sport at the time on a video game console, or one of the earliest ones to get it right. And then obviously to this day, it's a juggernaut. But John Madden, if you didn't know that, was a famous football coach in the 70s for the for the then Oakland Raiders. He won one Super Bowl. He went to almost got the Super Bowl a few other times. He was a great coach. Then obviously we grew up with him. I mean, at basically the same time, I knew him as a video game, you know, not guru. I guess guru, you can say that. He had influence in the games. But we knew him as an announcer, as a color analyst. And he sort of like set the mold for like an entertaining color analyst. He was knowledgeable, but he was also goofy. He made the turducken famous.
Yep.
He's the guy who made it famous, like whatever it was 20 years ago, talking about it. And he was very down to earth, and he was a guy, here's your guy, that everyone could relate to. And he didn't go too complex on the X's and O's for a lot of people. Like, he was like the common man's analyst.
Right.
And from whatever I'm saying, he was a super nice guy on top of it. And obviously very knowledgeable. So of course, when EA came to him to do the football game at first, we covered some video game years and everyone was talking about it. They're like, yo, we can't get 11 guys in the field on both teams. They said, well, that's not a football game then. You need 11 guys. You need 11 on 11. That's a football game.
Right.
So they had to make it work. And then obviously he put his own, you know, plays in the game. And like again, made it the best computer, the best football simulation. You know, that was the dominant football game for the first, whatever, 10 years at least. Till Quarterback Club tried to get it off its feet in the 2K. But like, it was just Madden. That was it.
There's Game Day. There was other ones. There was the Sega ones, but they really, Madden really
set the mold
for the yearly releases of sports games and stuff like that. Every other major sports game followed in its steps. You know, it's a solid play to call all the time, every day. Going to UltimateNintendo.com.
You can make that play call.
Yeah.
B22 UltimateNintendo.com. You can get the enamel pins to close out your 2021. You can get the limited t-shirt. We got a few of them left there for sale. The Ultimate Nintendo guidebooks are there as well. And the RBI baseball stickers are there. The RBI baseball stickers. Someone asked me at the event a couple weeks ago, how many do you think I've left? I don't know, 1750 of them. I have no idea, something like that. There's a lot left there. And then I will be probably on Thursday this week, just recording Wednesday. Thursday I'll be on Twitch this week, twitch.tv/countrycode. I'm also going to be finishing up an NES Punk episode before the end of the year. Knock on wood. It's a late Christmas episode. Before you get on me, the last Christmas episode was only 2 days late. And then the year before that, it was 2 days early. Or 1 day early. So I'm doing a Christmas episode. And before you get on me, Pat, why are you late? Because I went to I went on a trip, and then I did a flea market madness, and then Christmas week is hell. And cut me some slack, okay? You enjoy them. Let me get them out when I get them out. I'm a one-man band right here when it comes to this stuff. I was also on PBS. I forgot to mention that.
You mentioned that last week.
Did I? That it came out?
Yep. You mentioned it last week.
PBS Roundtable?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Because you said you mentioned me as well.
But I mentioned on the podcast?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, I was positive you did. I mean, go ahead and say it again if you didn't, but I don't know when you would have told me.
Well, it came out within the last week. So I think so. KPBS. Did a local San Diego podcasting thing, and I have a segment on there, so check that out. Bad news: GameWorks is closing. This is not a chain I'm familiar with, but it sounds like it's like a Dave and Buster style chain where you get an arcade and there's like a restaurant there. And I recognize the name, but I know nothing about GameWorks. They've been around, it looks like, since July '96. They're closing, 25 years. I guess they couldn't totally survive the pandemic. Looks like there's several locations that are left. Throughout the U.S. Midwest has most of them. There's one, it looks like, is that Seattle? Las Vegas has one in Colorado, and there's Chicago, looks like. There's one in Minnesota, Ohio, and is that Virginia? Virginia. So, yeah, I guess if people have fond memories of GameWorks, obviously it sucks. It's like a good burger on that page. I mean, I've been to Dave Buster's a couple times. Maybe this is a better version of that. I don't know. You know, I there's not one nearby, but it looks like it's the same sort of stuff. There's redemption games. You have your light gun games, Beat Saber. You know, you got your it's your modern arcade. I'm sure they have some traditional arcade games, but that's not what these places are about. That's not how they make their money. It's all about the redemption. It's all about stuff like that, you know. But it's sad. It's also sad.
Sad
is that Sea Cave.
Yeah, Sea Cave in New Orleans was vandalized. I mean, vandalized isn't the word. A guy, and I don't know the entire story, but basically, a guy was kicked out of Sea Cave for putting stickers on a machine. He came back with an axe and destroyed pretty much every screen in the building. Cops were called, and he locked people in there while he was doing it. He left. Cops were called. The cops came, took down the information. He came back later that night, I guess, and did more damage. And then the next night, he showed up with a gun. And then the cops finally caught him. We're talking about, I mean, an absolutely insane situation and scenario here. Literally every screen in the arcade was destroyed by this guy. So if you want to help Sea Cave, they do have a GoFundMe, help support Sea Cave, keep its employees paid. They're at $34,305 raised of a $30,000 goal. I think they had said in one article shortly after, maybe it's no longer accurate, that they thought it would take about $50,000 to replace everything that was damaged. So I hope they can, and I hope they can reopen and come back strong. But that, yeah, that's awful.
Some of these are older monitors that are not easy to replace. They don't make new these monitors from the 80s anymore.
No, so you have to go and find stuff that is, yeah, you have to go find parts that you can
sometimes
spare.
You can convert. They sell kits, I think, to convert some old CRTs, depending upon what type of it. You can do that and convert some older monitors. But like some of them, you know, they're not. There's no factories pumping out these old late 70s, early 80s. Monitors anymore. They're not out there. You can make do maybe on some of the newer stuff, but not the super old stuff like a fucking Vector, you know, monitor. It's like okay, great. I have a replacement value on it, but how am I going to easily find another one? You know, like right. That's we're talking about. There's not more being made. I'm just happy that no one got hurt. When you hear a gun and a crazy person, you're thinking, okay,
locking people in and an axe. Yeah, that could have gone horrible.
Yes. I can't imagine what the people are going through at that. You know, during that time. That sounds insane. So yeah, check it out. The Sea Cave Arcade GoFundMe is there. Good Old Games is in trouble, according to this article from The Verge. I think they did a CD Projekt Red owns Good Old Games. I forgot about that.
Yes. CD Projekt Red owns Good Old Games. And I don't know if Cyberpunk affected this any. Cyberpunk, from what I was reading the other day, it seemed like it ended up selling well, regardless of all the over the year, at least, regardless of all the criticisms. But it says that they're going to focus on a handpicked selection of games, transfer some developers to other projects. And basically, I have a feeling they're just going to make this store far more boutique-y than it was. It was really starting to expand and offer a lot more. And I'm wondering if they just can't afford to do that. So
yeah, because when I first heard of Good Old Games, it was basically like offering you know it was you're almost buying like Abandonware. A lot of it was like these older PC games that were at least 10 years ago. They weren't re-releasing those games from the 80s and 90s.
It's like it's where I went to go buy Heroes of Might and Magic 2 and 3, and you can get like, you know, Arcane, you can get the old CRPG, you know, D&D games like Planescape Torment and stuff there. All the stuff that everyone wants to play but had been forgotten about.
At one point in time, you couldn't find Doom 2 every single place, you know? At one point, you couldn't, you know? So, like, at one point, these old PC games, Good Old Games was, like, to me, it was synonymous with old PC games. Oh my God, they have X-Wing on there, Ian. Instead of me trying to get DOSBox working with my old CD, well, you can pay a few dollars, and they have it all loaded up for you. You can just click on it. It's basically a DOSBox thing, and there you go. Executable. It's like, there you go. It's convenience.
That was the thing I always liked about it was that they packaged everything with a, you know, a self-launching version of DOSBox that made the emulation of it super easy.
Yeah.
It wasn't difficult.
Yeah. It was like, you know, can you figure that out yourself? Yeah, I guess you can, but I don't want to spend 3 hours figuring out how to play my old TIE Fighter CD. You know, right. I don't want to do that. So that's how I always knew it. Then of course, they obviously want to make money to expand that to more modern games. Then maybe, I guess you lose your marketing. Sort of point, because then obviously you have Steam, you have Epic Games, you have everywhere else, you have you know, Ubisoft had their fucking store. I don't know if they still do. You have all these other stores. Like, then you have no competitive advantage when
EA has one.
EA has theirs. So, yeah, how can you compete? So it looks like in 2020, they had a profit of $1.37 million. But then in 2021, they had a net loss of $2.21 million for the past 3 quarters compared to a profit of $1.37 million profit over the same period, 2020. So they lost about $1 million year to year.
I wonder if it just has to, if it maybe comes down to part of it being like they're not unique anymore. Like a lot of that stuff you can get on Steam and whatnot. Now it's, they're not like a niche anymore. They're just another store.
Yeah. Actually, Pat, they went down $2 million looks like in total revenue. Then, well, I mean, well, operating revenue versus cost. I don't know, but they did worse this past.
Right.
And it's, then you think about what's happening. Did they expand staff? Did they maybe buy up some exclusives that didn't work out? You know what I mean? It could be a combination of things. You know,
give me one minute.
Expanded to. Oh, he's going to dogs. Okay, expanded to a more all-purpose storefront selling new third-party games and internal studio CD Projekt Red's The Witcher 3 and Cyberpunk 2077, plus an online service called Good Old Games Galaxy. It laid off a purported 10% of its staff in 2019. One staff member tied the earlier layoffs to increased competition in PC gaming storefronts, which has driven major platforms to lower the commission they take from developers. So this could be a situation where now they're forced to compete more because of, well, Epic Game Store taking less of a share as well. So, yeah, I don't know how this bundles in potentially with Cyberpunk 2077. Maybe that didn't help. That was already a year ago, and that was a terrible launch in the aftermath and the fallout of a game being incomplete and not playable on certain platforms. But hopefully Good Old Games stays around. Otherwise, I can picture potentially a buyout. I can picture someone like Steam obviously saying, well, we'll take on Good Old Games as basically like an imprint. Or maybe Epic Games would come in and buy a chunk of it. But I could see Good Old Games staying around. It has a brand. It has a name, and I think it will continue. I don't think it'll be shuttered for good. You want to talk about Logan Paul? So Logan Paul,
I mean, not really, but I think people are overreacting in this instance. Logan Paul went and took 15 Game Boy colors and submerged them in a resin square to make a coffee table. And then he put like a Pokemon sort of themed frame around it, and everyone went nuts. You know, oh, he's destroying the hardware, this, that, and the next thing. I don't care. The guy's done plenty of other things that were worthy of getting on his case over, but I don't think this is really it. It's 15 whole Game Boys.
There's some obviously some hard to find variants in there. I saw the two Pokemon ones. There might have been some
They're not impossible to find, though.
No, they're not impossible to find. And honestly, the way I looked at it is this. Obviously, he's been trying to, you know, he pumped a lot into like the Pokemon card market in the past year or two. The high end sales he's buying. You know, the unopened boxes. I think he bought packs that ended up being already like resealed packs. So he's obviously likes this. He grew up with it. This isn't something he can monetize. Like, he's not going to start making resin Game Boy color tables. So I'm actually not going to kill him for this. I think it's fine if he actually likes it and want to show it off.
He made a one-off piece. He made a one-off piece. If he had just purchased those 15 Game Boys and didn't submerge them in the resin, they would still be 15 Game Boys removed from the market, removed from circulation.
Yes. I own probably 10 Game Boy colors.
Yeah. Whether he buys those and leaves them unsubmerged, and people made some good points. You could do a glass table or something like that. Sure, you can, but it's 15 Game Boys. And yes, there's some rare ones, but if he had owned them, like I said, they would have been out of circulation anyway. It's not like it was a Pokemon Center Game Boy Light At least I didn't see. You know, those Pokemon ones are a bit more expensive now, but we always got them in at the stores.
They're not super hard to find. I know the one is harder to find than the other. I think the gold and silver one is
harder to find than the original.
So like, what do they go for? Like a couple $100? Like $100?
$100.
So it's it's not like he did this to an NWC cart. It's not like he did something that's irreplaceable, basically. So it's like, all right, that's fine. So like, wow, I have nothing bad to say about Logan Paul. There you go.
You know. Let the guy make his kind of tacky coffee table.
That's the best thing. If you're going to say that's the worst thing about it, it's like, wow, okay, it's a clear table. That's your art piece. Okay. It's like, I don't call it tacky. It's just like the laziest form of art. We'll just get something and encase it in plastic.
Yeah.
That's it.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Did you know, Ian, there was going to be almost Game Boy on the internet?
Yes, I did. And I swear we've talked about this, but you say we haven't. So Page Boy, I think we talked about this at during a convention. I think this was a convention topic we covered. But the Page Boy was to be a first party attachment for the Game Boy that would allow you to check your email and do basic PDA stuff on it. Notepads. I think there was like a small spreadsheet. Just weird little stuff, and it never happened. My guess is probably because the Game Boy was extremely long in the tooth by this point in time.
Sure,
this was. I think it was supposed to be for the original Game Boy.
A video covering it from Liam Robertson, and then he talked to some people that used to work on it. According to those involved at their meeting with Nintendo America 99, the company was excited about the potential for the Page Boy. And for the next 3 years, Nintendo worked with Wizard, a group created to help manage the device, to see if this add-on could actually be created and if it would end up being profitable. A lot happened between 99 and 2002. I mean, your cell phones blow up between that.
Right.
For the most part. Like that's by the 2002 was my last year in college. By then you started to see cell phones a lot more regularly, even with students having them. So a lot happens in those 3-4 years, late 90s to early 2000s. Cell phones really made that jump into like popularity,
right?
At that period in time. So the prices came down, the plans were more reasonable, even though looking back, you're like, how the hell could I spend, what, 10 cents a text? What the hell? Whatever it was, 5 cents. You got like 100 texts a month and then 10 cents a text. But there was that period that a lot happened between 98 and 2002. Internet exploded. Cell phones started to explode. You know, the world started to change more, if you want to say that. A lot of things, bump in technology happened then. So there you go. We didn't get to Ian to have our Game Boy colors strapped on our belt clips. On our belt. I can't believe that would have been a thing. Would you have done that? Strap your Pokemon Game Boy color on your
belt? I mean, maybe. It's possible. I might have considered it.
Ian.
Yeah.
End of the year. We didn't really talk about what some of our favorite topics were of the year. But if there was one saga that we talked about pretty consistently, it was the Intellivision Amico.
Sure.
And you think we would have a respite for the end of the year. But, we can discuss a little bit. Maybe it'll make Ian healthier talking about this. We don't know.
No, probably not.
But I didn't bring this up last week, and I held it off. I did play an Amico game at SAC Gamers Expo, which we'll get into. But first, Ian, and I can't see Ian's head anymore.
Thank you. It's right there.
There was a video release. For some reason, they decided we're going to rush out 4 or 5 videos at the end of the year. Gameplay videos. Like, this has all happened in the past month or so with the Battle Tank stuff and showing other games off. And I don't know what the consideration is that. Maybe they're trying to dominate the December newscape or something in January happening, but it's all very kind of fishy, them putting all those videos.
I think they know that they have to come out and officially say that these things aren't going to be released. I mean, They're saying quarter one 2022.
Which ain't happening.
It's not happening, no. But they have never actually addressed the statement that they made that said that these some of these could be shipping out in time for the end of the year. No apologies, no sorries, nothing there. So they know that this thing has got to be 6 months to a year off at the very least still. And I think they're just trying to make it look like things are happening to either keep the investors that are still in or to try to get more investors. What was the latest investment scheme that they were trying to run with? Nothing's been talked about on that. They don't even bring it up. I can't imagine that did well. It wasn't fundable, was it? Or was it fundable?
I think it was fundable was the third attempt. It was first FIG, then the Republic campaign, then fundable, which I haven't seen anything about because I guess requires more like it being a private investment. I know is this. It wasn't a good Christmas for the Republic investors.
No.
If you know that, Ian. Did they see any return or start to recoup any of their investment? No, that's the answer.
And they've been asking with no answers.
There hasn't been an update on the Republic campaign for 3 months, September 30th. 3 months.
That's insane.
People that are giving you money. And you've had this, you know, all these videos come out. You had all this coverage, good and bad. You had a couple of German sites cover you.
I don't think there was any good coverage. I mean, honestly,
well, there probably was one here or there, you know, some AARP fucking article or whatever that gave you a blurb, but like there was nothing. So this UI video comes out and I think we saw like some semblance of a UI like a year and a half ago in the video. This looks a little bit similar. We think it looked like a DVD menu and that's what it looks like. And they did this video, a deep dive. Sneak peek spelled correctly. I'll just say this about this UI.
It's awful and it's very busy.
You don't know that you're marketing video games when I see this. Like, give me an example why. You have a screen. These are like, it's like a TV oval screen showing the it's on Astro Smash. So these are spinning balls of the gameplay, which you can't see what the hell's happening. And then on the right side, you have an oval showing it. So you click on Astro Smash, Ian, I can't even see the ship in the Astro Smash going back and forth in the bottom of the screen. No. You can't even see the game, first off. But what's damning about this, are those biplanes being shown in like 20 frames a second somehow on the screen. Like, why is this not powerful enough to show a preview of the fucking game? Anyway, so the problem with this UI is that you have different focuses based upon orientation where things are on the screen. So almost every single time you see a UI for whether it's an emulator or whether it's for a game console, there's no dominance of certain titles or the other. It's just, okay, you're scrolling through a room and you see what you have. This, they get smaller, the circles, as you go left to right because they're angled. So like Shark is tiny compared to Astro Smash. So why are you giving dominance based upon where things are on the screen? That makes no sense to me.
Because they thought it looked cool.
I don't understand that, let alone the fact that, again, with the spinning globe, it's spinning and you can't even see what it is.
Well, Tommy even says during the video that he wanted it to have motion always, and I don't know why. Why would you want anything then? Right. It's incredibly busy. He says that like it's a deeply held secret of like UI design, but it's not. You don't want constant motion.
Your eyes can only focus on one thing. I can't look at the spinning motion of skiing and look at the Shark preview and look at Astro Smash spinning. You can't do that. You just physically can't do that. So again, no thoughts put into it. Again, there's like when you switch to it's like the TV signal goes out on things. Again, this is like, again, a boomer console and a boomer vision of what it'd be like. We have a TV signal going out like it's a cable TV in the 80s. And then here's the weirdest thing about this. I don't want to get too much into this because obviously there was font issues. Obviously some words were running together so that they didn't even have that correctly parsed out. You can look at your coin and your box of your game. If you bought the physical product version of it, they would add that to your store. How fucking weird is that?
Very weird.
To do that. You have the physical coin. Just look at the physical. Why don't you look at the digital representation of the coin you bought on the screen?
One other thing I would point out about it. they did not think about the future of this UI. They did not think beyond showing something, because all the games are shown on the UI. This UI can't scale up. The games that you have are lit up. The games that you don't have are darkened. So one, that's, you know, for a family-friendly console, that's an awful, like, predatory sales tactic. Yes. To have the kids constantly flipping through a list of games they can't play just to get to the one game or two games. Yes. That they can play.
It's extremely non-family friendly to do that.
Right.
It's like putting the candy right before the checkout aisle at the supermarket. That's exactly what it is.
Yes. And on top of that, what was I going to say? Shit. You can't scale that up. If they actually get to the point where they want to, where there's like 200, 300 games for this thing, you're going to make us look at a list of 300 games to find the 10 that we own.
Sure. No, it's like insane.
There was zero thought put into it.
I saw a comment from Tom, only some profiles are going to have ability to go to the store. So it's still, you're going to have kids say, oh my God, mommy. I mean, it's not going to happen because no kid's going to want these games. But in some world, a kid might say, I want this game. Where it's like, well, maybe now you got to deal with telling your kid, no, you can't buy that cheap game because you played the other five for 10 minutes total. And so I'm not spending another $10 on this game. Like, you're bringing up reasons that you're saying that the competitors aren't family friendly, and you're throwing it in their face on this UI.
Right.
You're doing that. And not every parent's going to realize that, oh, I got to set up a separate profile. So that, like, they're going to put their credit card in, and maybe little Timmy or Sue is going to click on a game and buy a few just like that. Just like that. It's just a bad idea. It's also super incomplete. When you go to the settings, Ian, there's not custom icons for system versus help versus language. You know, like power is usually like a power icon.
Yeah, no, it's
system all just... looks like the console. You know, language is usually like a person talking, like a cartoon head. They're all the little widgets. They haven't even done the custom artwork yet for the settings.
They're just gears. Yeah.
They're just gears. I mean, it's just, why even show this off at this point? There's nothing to show. Nothing. So that's all I want to say about it. It's more desperation, and it's obviously a bad direction from someone who's totally out of touch with what people want. I just thought it's funny that Italian's a first language under English when you click the language, because that should not be like that. You usually do it by predomination of the speaking population. It's always Spanish after English, and then usually it's French, and then German, and then Italian, something or Italian German. Like, Italian's never after English in any of these, but whatever. That's a small thing they could change. They should totally change. If that's Tommy just because, hey, I'm an Italian, then obviously you shouldn't be running a company, but we already established that. So I went to Sac Gamers Expo couple of weeks ago, had a great time there, and then I was in the guest section, Ian, and then Ed Annunziata was across from me. Mr. Annunziata was a creator of Echo the Dolphin. He was with Sega there and worked on some other stuff, and so Ed is going to be creating Dolphin Quest. We thought was going to be a game that would be coming out only on the Intellivision, Amico. Ed was super nice. He was
To hear Tommy talk about it, it certainly sounded that way.
Oh, yeah. So I was surprised to see that it was there. And I talked to Ed, super nice fellow. And I played the game for about 10, 15 minutes, and then saw a few other people playing it. And it's the spiritual successor to Echo the Dolphin. You have a dolphin, you swim around. You do flips in the water. You can push objects with your nose. You can communicate with other animals. It was like a two-button game. There was a button to an action button, and one was like a communicate button to basically. So I took over like a school of fish at one point. Like, you transferred, whatever. It's like being like Aquaman. You talk to like the school of fish, and then you control them. And I guess you can do like a mini game or solve puzzles. I think I took over another dolphin at one point. This was like, I'll say, pre-alpha. Because it was like all the gameplay elements, it seemed like were there, like on a semi-open world, we'll just say. You can go into caverns underground, you can open up these like oysters and get these like pearl items that you can unlock something else. So like the game elements were there. You can jump out of the water into bubbles and then do like a little timing to shoot to other bubbles, you know, to get to a certain point. So there was interesting game elements there. And I never played Echo really before. So I can see the appeal though, because like, oh, you can smoothly turn and go up and around, and you know, it's cute to have the different creatures there. There was like, I think like a giant whale in one part of it. And I was like, wow, this is going to be, this could be a hit. It controls smoothly. And you know, there was no lag on it at all. I'm like, this could be something. I was playing on a PS4 controller with an analog. I wasn't playing it on an Intellivision Amico controller. So it turns out this is not going to be an exclusive at all, this game. Ed told me that this is going to be, you know, on, you know, it'll be on your PlayStation consoles. It'll be on probably Steam. They're going to do a Kickstarter probably in 2022 for it. And then one of the best things he said to me, he said to me, Ed, and I hope Ed doesn't get in trouble with Tommy, but you have to let this people know what's up. He said it controls great on the Switch. So obviously there'll be plans to have this on the Switch.
Yeah. That's
a direct quote. So it's like when you realize that I feel bad for some of these devs that, you know, it's almost like you're hamstrung being connected to this console that may never come out. I mean, Tommy used a Dolphin Quest as like during the disastrous E3 video. It was like one of the tags to one of the categories. We have action games like Cornhole and this and Dolphin Quest.
Yeah.
You think like, oh, wow, I can only play that on the Amico. Okay. No. No, Ed realizes that he wants his creation to be seen as and played as many gamers as possible. You want it everywhere on the Switch, on the PS4 and 5, and on Steam and on Xbox. You don't want to tie this to the Amico. You don't.
No, absolutely not.
You know,
there's no money to be made doing that either.
I played it for a bit. I'll be looking forward to the Kickstarter. The one thing he did say would be exclusive to the Amico, 4 players instead of 2. I don't think this is a game where you're gonna have split screen on it, so I guess there'll have to be puzzles made up to solve where you have 4 dolphins instead of 2.
That's right.
The only thing I can think about, because this will be a bunch of problem solving, getting items and things like that, and going back and forth between different areas, I guess, in the stages. But again, this is like a pre-alpha. If I had a guess, I don't want to put words in anyone's mouth. I don't think this would come out next year. If I did, it'd be like probably the very end of next year, because again, we're not.
Well, if there's a Kickstarter for 2022, I would say that this is probably 2023.
Yeah,
earliest.
To be safe, I'd say 2023, because like I said, this was like pre-alpha. It looked like, it's like we have the game elements in here. The gameplay is probably complete, but like we have to build out this game still and do a lot of that nitty gritty work when it comes to it. So yeah, I guess we'll see what happens in 2023 for some of these devs, for some of these games that for the Amico that we actually want to see, like the Breakout reimagining that looks interesting.
Yeah,
we haven't heard anything about in so long. Hopefully that comes out and we can play that, because I'd give that a shot in the Switch. Probably you would as well, right? Or in the PS4.
I sure would.
Any other thoughts on Dolphin Quest? Did you play Echo at all when you were a kid?
I did. I played a lot of Echo, and the fun of Echo for me was just in the smoothness of the controls and swimming around and dashing and jumping out of the water. The game itself was a very cool idea. It was a very hard game. I'd be interested in seeing another, you know, a 2D, like this is a spiritual successor. Because yeah, it's a neat idea.
Ian, we have a Patreon, don't we?
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you pay a little money. You get full video podcasts, you get writings when I'm not sick and out of town, you get monthly hangouts, and you get these poll questions.
You get the exclusive podcast as well.
Oh yeah, that's right.
In second place, are sealed game collectors being mistreated? 40%. And then in first place, 60%. Thoughts on generic plug-and-play retro consoles as Christmas gifts? This comes from Zoe Kirk Robinson, who asked, what do you think of those retro arcade or retro 8-bit generic plug-and-play consoles that seem to flood the shops at Christmas? Good for nostalgia or just a cheap bit of crap? What do you think of that?
I mean, so if we're talking just the like the bootleg ones that, you know, show up at mall kiosks every year with names like Super Joy Brothers 2000 or whatever, I think the idea behind people buying them is that they will be a brief trip down memory lane and it will be enjoyable. But those things are generally so poorly made that I honestly doubt anyone gets any long-term enjoyment out of them. And then depending on which model you're getting or what they're using as a basis, a lot of those can only play the smallest, simplest NES games because they don't have mappers and stuff in them. So you're not going to be getting stuff like Mario 3. You're going to be getting stuff like Nuts and Milk.
Yes.
Which is not to say that those are bad games, but a lot of those really small games, you know, a good handful of them never came out over here. So you're not even going to see the nostalgia games, the games that are going to give you the nostalgia. They get you with a Mario Brothers running on like a TV screen or something like sure. that, you know, a Mario 1. But yeah, it's mostly going to be stuff that people don't remember.
I'm looking at one on Amazon right now. I just put the link. I put in a couple of comparison. So if we're talking about the ones that are based upon old retro consoles, you have stuff like their Rice Mital NES Classic Retro Game Console with 620 video games and two classic NES wireless controllers, AV and HDMI output, $48. There's 3.5 stars on it, 10 ratings only. And again, wireless controllers with it's an AV to HDMI little cheap fucking $3 adapter they include. So it's not even a real HDMI out, Ian. Isn't that great? So that's fantastic. I realized that when I first saw it, I was like, there's no way this is built in because it costs me more money. So yeah. When you see this stuff, this would scratch the itch maybe of someone who isn't into the games that much, but it's like, oh, this is a nice little gift to have. But you're right. They aren't going to be playing this that long. This is going to be something where they're going to be like, okay, this, again, scratch that itch. I remember playing games in the 80s and 90s. Thanks for getting it for me. I'll take it out every month and a half when I'm drinking, sort of thing. Or
right.
Like when someone's always like, hey, you remember, hey, Todd, you remember when we used to play when we were kids, we played, Contra. And maybe Contra's on there. I see Russian Attack in the picture, you know, for example, or Gradius. Oh, River City Ransom's on there. So that's what I'm going to say about that. There's also like the handheld ones, but I can't picture the handheld ones being a Christmas present. I think they're more for like maybe people that want to play these games more cheaply that remember them.
Right.
Blansters, 500 Classic FC, I guess for Famicom, 3-inch screen, rechargeable battery portable. It looks like trash, but I'll put the link in here right now. I just pasted it there, and it includes a Famicom controller that you can plug into the handheld to play them both at the same time. That'll be great, Dean.
That's what I was going to bring up, was a lot of those, like if you looked at them, like a lot of the plug and play ones that were just like a controller, they had like a multi-cart jammed into the bottom of them. Like it wasn't even, you know, emulation, it was just a multi-cart and a Famiclone, and you know, here's your big system. A lot of the ones that were sold in malls were like that.
Look at the quality in that plastic, Ian, that Blansters. Look at that thing. I mean, that just looks terrible. I mean, I don't know the quality of the screen. It's got 4 stars out of a 200 rating, so maybe.
Yes, Blansters.
So these are fucking bootleg cops. But I took him to mean the ones that are actually like legit ones. Like this one I have in here, Ian, the My Arcade Plug and Play TV game console, 220 retro style games. Plugs in the TV. Battery or USB operated. Battery? Ergonomic controller shape, tactile buttons. So the controller is kind of shaped like almost like an Xbox controller. It has the Xbox color buttons, the blue, yellow, green, and red. There's an analog on it. There's a D-pad. Yeah, it's like an Xbox controller. The original Xbox, it kind of looks like there. And these are not old retro games. These are retro style games. On the cover, you have like a platformer. There's like Chinese checkers on there. There's like this platform with like a little monkey, it looks like, running around. There's a single screen game. I've seen these before, and my first thought when I see these, I'm like, where the hell did these games come from, or what are these games?
Right.
I don't know if they farm these out or they search far and wide to license these, but I don't know what these are. I just don't.
So my guess would be, from talking to Frank, a lot of these are just NES ROMs.
Sure.
So basically, the, you know, these companies got good at making these NES games because that's the hardware they were using forever for this plug and play stuff. And, you know, every once in a while, a plug and play would come out and have its own original game on it. And they're always like very, very simple games and generally not very well made. And I bet you it's just all of those. I mean, I'm sure licensing on those is not real strict.
Sure. But this is a legit product though, the My Arcade stuff. You see that stuff in like Target.
Yeah.
You know. So like some of the comments. This is like 3.5 stars. This would be the item that if this existed when we were kids, your great aunt would get for you thinking, oh, well, you like video games? Here, have this. And you're like, these games are trash.
Yeah. Well,
these aren't games that I remember playing. You know, like this is the game where it's like you're in the ballpark, but you're still not close to what the kid actually wants.
Right.
And one of the comments actually borns that out, one of the top comments for it. From someone named Jill, like, oh, they got 2 unfunctional plug and play TV game systems in a row since February. Okay, the quality sucked. All right, so that I do not recommend unless you only want entertainment for short term situations. Then it becomes a piece of garbage. Okay, wouldn't recommend. The controller is cheaply made and the games are in the lowest definition. Well, looks like you literally stepped in a time capsule. It's so bad you can barely see your scores or read the words. So like you said, yeah, there might be NES ROMs that, you know, this is AVI or a bad HDMI on this. And yeah, it's not looking too hot
right
on there. My thought is that maybe some are like, it's like a cheap Android emulator, but for the cost, maybe not. Maybe they'll do like cheap, like Android style
right
games in here. I'm almost like tempted to get one because I've never played anything like this. But here's one from, here's a comment. Bought this for my 4-year-old grandson. Very few games that were fun to play. Not a shock. One of them only worked for a couple of times.
How does one game only work a couple of times?
There's like a limit on how often you can play the games. Ended up throwing it out after a couple of weeks. Wasted my money. I spelled wasted wrong there. The cord is very short. Not the highest quality, but has older games that you don't find anymore. I think they're mistaken. I think they mean there's like older style games on here,
right,
that you can't find anymore. Oh, okay. Here's one from Denise. The games are very simple and kid friendly. Okay. But some people saying it didn't work at all. Power came on, but no signal TV. So again, this is like a stocking stuffer thing, mass produced, that like there's no potential, not a lot of quality control.
Right.
And you're not, This isn't, you rather get the bootleg retro consoles if you're going to go down
this road. At least get the bootleg console with the games that are,
you know the games are good. Fun. The quality of the hardware are good, but you know the games are at least are fun. They're established. They're not,
right,
you know, potentially from fly-by-night companies putting together crap real quick. Yeah, I think I have to pick one of these up. I think I need a My Arcade plug-and-play. There's lots of other ones, though. There's 601 ones that look like PlayStation. There's one that looks like a handle, looks like the Switch. They're all out there, but I'm thankful that, you know, these didn't exist 15 years ago. So I think my parents would have bought me them thinking, well, Pat, you like collecting games. I'm going to get you one of these. And I'd be like, this is a piece of garbage. I don't
right.
So,
all right. Well, voicemails. I think I might have to skip the voicemails.
You want me to just do the voicemails myself this week?
If you want to do them, or we can just go a week without them. I think it's fine, but I got to tap out.
You got to tap out?
Yes.
All right. We're gonna skip the voicemails. I don't think that's fun to do it because some people ask for Ian's opinion versus mine. So
all right, right. We'll do them next week.
We'll
do it live.
Yeah, we'll do it live. All right, Ian. I'll help you feel better. You and
thank
everyone
you.
Else, your family. We'll do that. We'll do the unwrapping of gifts next week. Hopefully next Tuesday when we're back here.
Yep.
And hope you have a good New Year. Hope because my New Year's usually suck. So
here's to a good one. All right, bye.
All right. See you, everyone. Oh, new NES Punk video will be out by the end of the year. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.